We have the roll call, please.
Here.
Okay, can I have a review and approval of the minutes, if appropriate, please?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we approve the minutes of June 19th, 2013.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second to approve the minutes from June 19th. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Same sign opposed. Motion passes. Okay. Welcome to the Plan and Zone Commission meeting for the three of you in attendance out there for July the 17th, 2013. We are a recommending board appointed by the City Council to review matters appropriate for plan and zoning. So with that, we will begin. Mr. Gregg.
Mr. Chairman, the first case that we have before us tonight is one involving a replatting. This is the last area left of what was Crown Point 6th edition, and it has yet to be developed. This area is all zone C5, but under our C5 ordinance, we do still permit housing that was grandfathered in prior to September of 2006. And this is the last piece of what pretty much will be developed as C5 multifamily. This is the preliminary plat that was originally done. This is relatively the area you're looking at right here. And you'll see the topography is pretty steep in some of these areas. Most of these are anticipated right here to be walkouts. And this is the lot of record right here that's being replatted. Lot 3 of Crown Point 6th edition. All these lots were originally platted as one lot, and then when the subdividing for property purposes for the property lines for each of these condominiums was selected, then the replatting occurred. This is the site right here. The area in purple shows the area that's being replatted. There's a pond feature back here. There's a drop off that occurs from that level right there, and you'll have access coming in off of Crown Point Circle. And this is the plat as it's shown, anticipated. Very little changed in the way of any boundaries except for an area that's jogged back here just a little bit. Other than that, everything is the same as you saw for Lot 3 and Crown Point 6th edition. And the dimensions for this are all the same. So we're looking at essentially the splitting of that lot into four pieces to accommodate the townhouse arrangement. Staff in reviewing this proposal recommends approval with the conditions listed in the report. I would ask, are there any questions?
Do we have any questions from the commission this evening?
Seems pretty straightforward.
Straightforward. Anyone in the audience wish to address us in this regard? Seeing none. All right, I guess we would entertain a motion then.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move we approve case number 13-039, subject to the staff recommendations.
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second to approve case 13039, subject to staff recommendations. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion passes. We're all ready to other on the agenda.
Here comes the other right here.
All right.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to abstain on this case.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, as you know, we've been working on the transportation plan. It had not been previously updated since 1988. It did get derailed a little bit because it got put behind the corridor and trails plan that coincidentally the City Council approved last night, but we're going to try and get this thing here approved in the near future and move on with the update of the comprehensive plan.
Great, thanks Bill.
Almost there.
Okay. My name is Brian Wilhelm. I'm with Shy Pattery, and I'm a transportation traffic engineer, and I led the efforts on the transportation plan. And so, although I know that you've all read it front to back probably about six times by now and have lots of great questions, I thought I would just really quickly, I just picked out some of the highlights from the different sections, and I thought I'd just touch on those, and maybe as we go through, just ask questions as we go through, and we can talk about that some more. So here's a little bit of the background information. Started actually really got started about 3 years ago. It took a while to get the data we needed from Bi-State to get started, and then, like Bill mentioned, waiting on the trails plan. So it's been a process. The transportation development strategy for that northern part of town that you guys are probably familiar with, I'll touch on that later, but that was in coordination with this so that everything was really on the same page, if you will, as we were putting things together. And we had a couple of meetings. We wanted to meet with the Bicycle Club right away, early on, just because the plan is very multimodal, and so we really wanted to make sure we had their input, right when we were getting started. And then we had a had an open house on the actual plan in March. Just some more background information. This is an update to the long-range transportation plan. So really using what was there before and updating all the information. Again, coordination with some of the other plans that we've got going on. And then it's really meant to be a roadmap for the city moving forward on identifying some of the missing links and streets that need to happen, and then also to help with as things get laid out in the capital improvements planning too. So this is just this is the table of contents from the plan, and these are the things that we'll touch on really quick: the streets and highways, the river crossings, rail, transit, air, waterway, sidewalks, and then trails and bike lanes. So as far as streets and highways go, these are just maps that we've got in the back of the plan. This one shows the different classifications of streets that are in town, both existing and what we're expecting the future ones to be. Purple are collectors, blue are arterial. So you can see the plan's really focused around those major, the major streets, trying to figure out where those are and what those need to be. This is the data that we, you can't really read it, but this is the data that we received from Bi-State. This is sort of our baseline data that we needed. They've got their region-wide transportation model, and so we needed to know what those future volumes were going to be so that we could compare with what we're looking at. And so that ends up creating this map here, which really just shows, you can see the different colors, the green and yellow, the blue in there. So what this map says is what is the capacity of the street, and then it compares that with those future volumes that they're projecting out there. And so if we have areas where the street is not going to be able to handle the traffic that they're projecting in the future, then that helps us identify a need to address those streets. And so that's our first category, of street improvements that we're identifying, and they're just called capacity improvement projects. And like I mentioned, they're just based on what Bi-State is saying the future traffic's going to be, so that we need to keep an eye on these as time moves ahead, so that we don't let it get too far down the road and things get really congested and bad. So we have an idea of how to plan for those. The other two categories of improvements that we identified were what we called connectivity and economic development projects, and that was really just saying, we've got our existing street system in town. Where should we put future streets to connect what we have now to help open up, development, especially up in this area? Where'd the mouse go? Up in this area here. And so we wanted to break these things into categories so that we could tell You know, with the blue streets are those connectivity and economic development projects. So these aren't streets that the MPO has identified because they're not existing streets. These are streets that we know are going to need in the future to help support the development that's going to happen. The MPO is really focusing on streets that are there now and what are going to happen to those streets in the future. So we wanted to identify both. And then we have a few too that we know are going to need to be reconstructed, and that's simply just because they're falling apart and getting old. And so rather than just saying whatever falls apart gets replaced as is, we wanted to be able to identify if we wanted to change what that section should be, again, based on some future traffic volumes and future connectivity and mobility throughout town. So that was the basis of setting those up. And then I just picked out a few other things that were in that section. One, the top image is that preferred alternative from the TDS that was done a year and a half ago or so. And that, and if I back up one, you can see we made sure everything's implemented within the plan too. So everything's really coordinated, and there's not, you know, one plan over here that says something and the transportation plan says something else. We made sure that everything's really saying the same message. And then the bottom piece there, that's just that's an exhibit of some of the improvements that are being contemplated for the I-74 work. And so we again, back to this map, obviously wanted to identify those as, you know, capacity or improvement projects down here. And so that's consistent with what is being planned right now with the I-74 project.
Brian, back to that last slide for just a second. Now, for example, I'm looking at, it looks like a blue, and blue is a connectivity development progress somewhere coming across the river there to the right side of your, yes,
here.
Right. Is that a proposed road, for example?
That is, and that's part of what we'll talk about in river crossings, but that is, you know, if there were another bridge to happen in the area, you know, the what's been talked about up until now is that would probably be some sort of extension of Tanglefoot and then going across the river. So that's just showing a, and I think if I go back to this one, so this one here, you can see it's a dashed line. So it's shown as a, you know, potential future. Yeah. And again, that's not something that the MPO is saying needs to happen based on capacity. It's just saying something that we think, you know, would be part of the overall connecting communities. Yep. And then I end, you know, each, as you guys saw in the report, we've got some, you know, some recommendations that go along with each section. And really, you know, some of them are recommendations, some of it's really just a summary and things that are happening anyway that that the city does. And so, you know, we talk about just making sure that as new streets, you know, especially some of those new alignments happen, we're careful with our access management, things like that. And then, you know, just as development continues, to use this plan as a, you know, as an initial map of where streets can be. And then just talking about, you know, as it makes sense, you know, as different areas of town start to develop, you know, looking at preserving right-of-way and things like that, you know, for some of those streets, just so that development doesn't start to happen and then all of a sudden it's right where one of our major north-south or east-west roads wants to be. So it's really just a corridor preservation idea there. So is there any more comments or anything on the streets and highways part?
Just a question for you. The data that you use from Bi-State,
yep.
How old is that?
That would have been developed probably 2 years ago now.
So it's fairly recent.
It's pretty recent, yeah. And again, it's not like I'm expecting, you know, 2040 to be down to the, you know, to the exact number. We're really just looking at those magnitudes and saying these areas are probably going to need it more than other areas. And, you know, that doesn't mean that things don't change either. You know, these plans are really, you know, meant to be, you know, here's a snapshot right now, you know, in a few years from now, let's look at this map again and make sure things are still tracking with where they with where we thought they were.
Do you have a recommended time line for the project for like when you should look at it again? And is there
it really kind of depends, you know, you know, and Bill and engineering, they're watching, you know, as different as the DOT does their traffic counts. I think they do traffic counts every 4 or 5 years, you know, and if we start to see a significant increase over what we're expecting, then it might be good to go back to Bi-State and have them, you know, recreate this map and see what's going on there. But in general, you know, in general, you can kind of gauge by, you know, and this is assuming some level of development, you know, throughout between now and 2040. So, I mean, I'd say there's no perfect answer to that, I guess, but
if
just
you based it on like
getting a gut feel.
Population growth. I mean, if you said this, you know, if this population doubles, this is going to be invalid, or, you know, is there anything like that in your projections?
You know, really what might make sense is just to, you know, have this document and maybe just have a plan to have Bi-State create this map every 4 or 5 years and just simply look at it and see if things have changed. Really, that'd be an easy way to, because you don't want to go through and do all this and spend the money on a report like this really often, but that would be something that you could do.
I think that what's really going to trigger a big change will be if something happens on the north side of I-80 and Middle Road. Currently, we've got improvements to Forest Grove Drive through the city, extending Hopewell Avenue to the east for the connectivity. So, you know, the city council is kind of out in front of this already. Make sure we prepare for future development, but if something starts to happen up at I-80 Middle Road, that's going to significantly affect this plan, I think.
Thank you.
So that's streets and highways. The rest of it, you're going to see, we really focus a lot on streets and highways, but we do touch on all the other modes of transportation. And so here, you know, in the river crossing section, we do talk about, we just sort of give an update on the I-74 progress and essentially just say that it's going to take a really long time for it to happen. And then again, we refer back to if another crossing were to be contemplated, right now at least, it might make sense to be that extension of Tanglefoot Lane. And so, those are the recommendations, if you will, for the river crossings, is to continue working on I-74 and watch for any kind of studies that might be happening with that second bridge. In all reality, you know, the focus is really going to be on that I-74 for a long time, but at some point in time, it's just good to keep in mind that that could be a location for that second crossing. Rail, we have a little section on rail where we really just talk about, you know, we kind of list out some of the users that are using some of the rail that we've got, something like 16 or 20 trains a day, you know, going through downtown, and that past studies have shown and agreements too, I think, that if there were, you know, if congestion starts to really get bad downtown, that if we were to look at a grade separation, it'd probably be somewhere in that 23rd Street area. And then we have a little discussion on the passenger rail stuff that's going on. And again, I think there's been some news out really recently that process has also taken a really long time. So it's hard to say exactly when, you know, when we're going to see anything there. But we do discuss it a little bit in there. And again, there, just continue to watch to watch what the coalition's doing, and then watch for traffic congestion down at the downtown with that potential separated grade crossing. Transit, we worked with Transit to put together a current map of their routes and also noted that they're actually working right now I think they're constantly, you know, trying to make it better. And so this is kind of a dynamic thing too. But as of when we put it together, this was what they were looking at for some future routes in the dashed, and the solid routes are in solid. We have some discussion on, you know, some of the connecting systems that folks can get to from the Bettendorf Transit System. And we've got we took a graphic from Bi-State's long range transportation plan just to show that, you know, transit is increasing over time, which is a really good sign and really is the trend, you know, really across the Midwest, as people are starting to use transit more, walk more, use their bicycles more, you know, wanting to use their car less if they can. So, and again, that's one of the good things for us doing this plan is that it's really multimodal based, and we'll talk more about that in a second.
Do fuel prices correlate with ridership increase? What's the driver of increased transit use?
I think part of it's fuel price. Part of it is I've seen some studies out now that the younger generation that are starting to be able to go get their license and start to drive are just choosing not to. You know, that they're just if they don't need the hassle of owning and maintaining a car, you know, if they can get away with not having it, that's becoming a trend. More so probably in more urbanized areas, but it's interesting to see, you know, even here, you know, transit is on the rise, and it's not just, you know, a couple of years. I mean, you can see it's
right.
Starting back in 2003, 2004, it's been a pretty constant increase. So that's encouraging, I think.
Does that include the loop?
I think it would. I think it's anything that would be touching Bettendorf. So, I don't remember when the loop started. I don't have that date on me, but I do know that's been a really popular choice. So again, this is, you know, more of just status than recommendations. I mean, the transit does a great job of, like I mentioned, constantly being involved in the different task forces and looking at routes and talking to the other systems and making sure everything's connected well and stuff like that. So it's really just a discussion on what transit's up to. Air, you know, there's again, we took this from the long range transportation plan. You can kind of see, and what I was reading was, you know, freight really took a dive when trucking really picked up in the early 2000s, and so that's and this is what the airport over in Moline. And I think I don't have it on the slide, but you know, again, in that section we're really just kind of talking about what the airport's up to, that they have about, you know, a million people a year using the airport and stuff like that. So we're not really recommending anything for the airport. We're just more including it in our plan just to show that it is part of the regional system. Somewhere with the waterway stuff, we just list out, you know, who some of the users are with the barge traffic. And, you know, here's another interesting trend, you know, barge freight is slowly on a decrease. And a lot of that, from what I was reading and researched, was the Corps of Engineers did a big study and, you know, found that there's just hundreds of millions of dollars of repairs that are needed to all the locks and dams all along the river, and that's just starting to impact, you know, what kind of capacity they can get through the river. And so that's one of those things where, you know, if there was this magical pot of money that they could really improve the river, then that trend would probably go back up. But it's just one of those where do you find the money type deals. And so the recommendations there is obviously just, you know, supporting the Channel Cat, and then you know, with what the Parks Board is looking at for trying to, you know, keep some boat access going through their efforts. Sidewalks, we just have a discussion on sidewalks. This is the program that the city uses as far as if there's a gap or a missing link in the sidewalk system, This is one tool that can be used to sort of rate the impact of that sidewalk being missing. And so, you know, you can see there's some scores there, and depending on, you know, if you're close to a park or areas where people might be wanting to walk to or from, and then depending on what sort of street it's along, you add up these totals. And I think right now, you know, if the score gets to be 65 or 70-ish, then it becomes a pretty viable project for the city to look at and program out in their CIP planning. So we just wanted to document that in the plan. And really just, we had some, you know, discussion on just general things for sidewalks, making sure we look at incorporating sidewalks with road projects, you know, nothing earth shattering here, continuing the inspection program, making sure that, you know, we continue to provide a good system for people to walk around. And then, you know, these last two is really, and Bettendorf already does a great job of doing this, but just continuing to look for and react to, you know, issues that the public might come forward with safety problems or things like that, and paying attention to the new, you know, the ProAg standards, and that's that new, it's like ADA for buildings, but this is within public rights of way. And so, you know, with that, with number six there, those standards have already recently been adopted by the Iowa DOT and SUDAS, which is the statewide urban design standards. And so, you know, any new project and really any reconstruction project are really starting to follow those more stringent standards anyway. And so, you know, we're right in line with what we need to do there. Trails and bicycle lanes, this image should be familiar. This is from the trails plan that was just adopted yesterday, I guess. And so, again, to be consistent with what, you know, with other plans and stuff in town, no change here. I mean, this is, we work side by side together with that. So this is the same exact thing, showing where, you know, showing where the different corridors we looked at, you know, looking to where we should have the 5-foot sidewalks versus 6-foot sidewalks, shared use lanes, bicycle lanes, all that good stuff. And then we included a, you know, some design guidelines for those separated trails in the document also. These are a couple of excerpts of what we have in there, just showing some different ideas of what can be used for bike lane widths, you know, if you're next to a through lane, or if your bike lane is between a through lane and a parking lane, you know, it should be a little bit wider, just to help avoid being smacked by a door or, you know, something like that. And so we've got all those in the plan so that, you know, as corridors are improved, then this will be a nice tool to come back to and be able to have a great starting point of, you know, what should I use for lane widths and bike lane widths and all that good stuff. Recommendations there, just obviously continue to look at this as those corridors are developed in conjunction with the trails plan that just got adopted. And I think that's what I had, but I'd be happy to go through anything else in more detail or answer your questions.
Anyone on the commission? Curious on the bike trail or the bike lanes adjacent to the traffic lanes we just looked at. I was just in Southwest Florida, and they've got them all over the place. I don't see too many people using them, and it's kind of scary with some of the folks driving down there to get on the road. But what kind of data do you see as far as car-bicycle interaction? Is it an issue, or do people get used to it? It's just a little intimidating for a lot of folks to have a bicycle lane that you've got to cross to make turns and other things.
Right, and that's one thing that we looked really carefully at, both in this and the trails plan. And really what we're recommending is, you know, if we're on a three-lane section, meaning, you know, one lane each way with either a median in the middle or a center turn lane, then providing the bike lanes makes sense. But at the same time, also having the off-street option too, because we know that that, you know, I know my two daughters, they're not going to be riding out in the street. You know, they're going to be on that. They're either going to be on the sidewalk or they're going to be on the path, whatever's off to the side. But what we said was, so as we, and that's sort of manageable. There's some different things we can do at intersections. There's some newer things to help bicyclists, especially at like a signalized intersection. If you're familiar with the bike box idea, it's essentially just some extra space at the intersection so a bicycle can pull up. If it's a red light, now they have this area in front of all the cars that can come out and have the priority. But recognizing that as we start to move from that 3-lane to the 5-lane, there's a lot more traffic, things are getting a little faster. We don't recommend bike lanes on the 5-lane street. There we recommend just using the separated path, knowing that the real experienced bicyclists are going to be, you know, using the street anyway, and that's fine. But you know, we really want to promote more of the middle of the road users, you know, to be on the lower speed facilities. So I don't know if that answers your question.
Oh yeah, it does, because it, and then some of the large roads down there, they on the 5 lanes and 6 and 7, they've got them set up, but rarely, sorry, do I see people using them, even though the climate kind of supports it, versus some of the secondary roads where it would seem like it would make a lot of sense.
Right, yeah. And that's an issue. I mean, you know, when bike lanes started to get popular, it was like, no matter what the road is, we've got some extra space, let's put a bike lane there. You know, and like you said, once you start to do any kind of crossing or any kind of conflict with trying to make a left turn or something, then it gets pretty dicey.
Yep. Good stuff. Any other comments, questions?
I do have a bicycle question, kind of following this same discussion. I understand what you're saying about the 5 lanes, and it sounds like that is kind of the cutoff point for putting the bike lanes in the street. And I know there's a lot of work going on in Bettendorf right now, and more planned in the thoroughfare plan. That's hard to say to accommodate bicycles. So when we look at an accommodation like we're installing on Devil's Glen Road right now, which is off the road,
right,
versus what was installed or is in the process of being installed on Tanglefoot, which is on road,
right,
and that's a 5-lane road. What's the criteria for deciding which is appropriate for what setting?
You know, there's no numbers to look at. It's really more of, you know, one, what are you trying to connect? And so, you know, do we want a bicycle lane there? You know, because we're trying to connect with other bicycle lanes, trying to get someone so they don't have to come on and off and on and off a lot. And then it's really, you know, trying to get a feel for the volume and speed of traffic. And so, you know, in that instance, I think the city's identified Tanglefoot as really wanting to be, you know, more multimodal. And so really trying to reconstruct that with that in mind, you know, with the wider stripes so that the bike lanes are even more visible than usual. So I think it's really just sort of how it fits into the overall plan, and trying to keep in mind some of that speed and volume type stuff.
Okay.
With regard to the Tanglefoot Lane example, there's actually an on-road bicycle lane and the 8-foot multi-use trail on that road. And I mean, I've had some people who don't necessarily use it comment, why do we have both? I mean, why do you have an 8-foot wide trail on one that's off-road plus the bicycle lane on Tanglefoot Lane if an experienced cyclist is going to use the road anyway?
Sure.
It just seems like overkill to some people.
Yeah, I mean, you can definitely see that. You know, it's partly culture change too. It's partly trying to get more people used to being next to traffic, you know, and not just having the really hardcore bicyclists, you know, being the only ones ever using ever using the street. So I would definitely say that, you know, it's not perfect solution right now. I think part of it is just changing mindsets of, you know, are we going to continue to see transit increase? Are we going to continue to see more people want to use their bicycle? And then if we do, in 5 or 10 years from now, then it'll probably look perfectly natural because they'll be both being used quite a bit.
Yeah, and I wasn't trying to be critical. It's just, no. I don't know how to answer that question when people say, well, why do they have both?
Can I help with that, Brian? Part of the philosophy is, and we're looking at doing this with Forest Grove Drive when that gets paved, is you don't have the traffic at this time that really calls for a four-lane road. So if you put the center turn lane in, one lane going each direction, and a 6.5-foot bicycle lane on each side, when the traffic count gets to the point where you need the extra access, you come in and restripe it, and then you've got two lanes each direction. So that's a little bit of the philosophy also. But we, you know, we've discussed this a lot, and I don't think we ever see a situation where we're just going to have on-street bicycle lanes without having at least a 6-foot recreation trail next to it, because to Brian's point, you don't want the toddlers or the youngsters out there or the people that are inexperienced riders. So it's... we discuss that a lot in this process.
Michael, thanks for bringing it up.
Anyone else? No. Okay, great. Thank you for the presentation.
Thank you.
Good stuff. Commission update. Or do we have something
to
approve?
Would you like to make a recommendation? Are you ready to make a recommendation to the City Council?
That we adopt the transportation plan?
Yes,
I think we can do that.
So?
If I can get a motion from someone on the commission.
I'd be happy to make that motion.
Well, thank you, Ms.
And
Anna.
I will refer to it as case number 13-034.
The transportation plan.
The transportation plan.
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second to adopt the transportation plan known as case 13-034 for our purposes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion passes. Thank you, Mr. Bell. Now we'll do the commission update.
Subsequent to your last meeting, City Council held a public hearing and approved the first reading of the Tanglewood Terrace rezoning for advanced homes on Middle Road. Century Heights 20th edition is still in a holding pattern. We've had several meetings with developers and interested parties, and I think we're getting closer, but we're not quite there yet. City Council has made it pretty clear to us that unless there's a second access point in there, they're probably not going to approve the final plat. So staff and interested parties are still working diligently on this, getting a little closer with every meeting, but not quite there yet. City Council approved the Haley Heights second edition. Approve the Wartburg Zion second edition. Approve the site development plan for 909 Middle Road, which is the Hilton Garden Inn project with a couple of outbuildings on the site. And they did vote last night to adopt the final citywide trails and corridor study.
Wonderful.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's all I have.
Appreciate that, Bill. Any other items for the good of the order tonight? Seeing none, we are adjourned.